Hello and welcome to the Farm Forum podcast. I'm your host, Jonah Comstock. My guest today is Jane Reed. And Jane, what's your title at Lingomatics?
I'm Director of Life Science at IQVIA NLP, which is the new name for Lingomatics. Now we've joined the IQVIA family.
So Jane Reed, Director of Life Science at IQVIA NLP. So we know IQVIA well. We worked with you guys on some different contributed pieces and things, but I'm not as familiar with the entity formerly known as Lingomatics. So tell me a little bit about what you do there and about yourself.
So Lingomatics is a company that's been going for about 2 decades, and we create solutions for companies who need to get value from unstructured text. So natural language processing is an AI technology or a suite of AI technologies to really make sure that you can more effectively access information in unstructured text. And my role is I lead the strategic vision for our kind of product portfolio and business development for the pharma and biotech market, with a particular focus on safety and regulatory affairs.
So give me an example of how you might work with a pharma or a biotech company?
So it can range from, so our software can be delivered as a license. So we have experts within AstraZeneca, Pfizer, Lilly, for example, who basically use our software to solve their own team's challenges. Or we do a lot of project work. So for example, within discovery, we might work with a company who they just want to get the landscape information around a particular therapeutic area, a particular drug class, and we'll go and use our technology to mine the relevant documents. That might be literature, it might be websites, it might be safety reports, it might be drug labels, and we'll surface the information, synthesize it, and feed that back as a set of insights in a report. So really everything from that kind of services to software.
I thought it might be good to start out with just a little bit of defining terms and level setting about AI. Obviously, everyone is talking about AI right now. The terms AI and machine learning sometimes get used interchangeably. And then generative AI and GPTs and large language models are all kind of a little different than the AI we were using before. And you know, you mentioned natural language processing, which I know is part of how generative AI works, but it's also, so to kind of spin that out for me and for our listeners, just, you know, what do we mean sort of when we use those different terms?
Yeah, so I'll just give a caveat and say probably if you ask a dozen different people, you'll get a dozen slightly different definitions. But a common definition of AI, artificial intelligence, is when a computer can do a task that historically only a human could do. So in the broadest sense, it's an umbrella term. It encompasses all of the other things we're going to be talking about, machine learning, natural language processing, Gen AI, but also can be rules-based. So things like structured content authoring rather than kind of statistical-based. So that's your biggest umbrella, biggest bucket. And then within that, machine learning is a category that involves creating algorithms or models that are trained on data sets to create a model that's capable of predicting outcomes given particular information. And so that's things like recommendation engines. You know, when you're on Amazon and you get all these other products showing up on your feeds, or Google Maps. So in many ways, you know, those kind of, everybody's used to using machine learning. They probably don't know they're using it. So, and then if you drill in a bit deeper, large language models are actually a type of machine learning that uses deep learning techniques on neural networks and huge, huge data sets, kind of thousands or millions of gigabytes worth of text data to train in order to then again be able to help predict, but very much focused on language. So you've got that AI, the machine learning, the large language models, and then natural language processing is more of a kind of a circle within that, but it's a sort of more of a function that uses a range of technologies. So you can use really basic AI technologies such as rules-based pattern matching, regex, or, you know, ontologies. But you can also use those machine learning technologies and large language models to process the volumes of unstructured text. And it encompasses both what we call natural language understanding, so being able to, in essence, read documents like a human would, and then natural language generation, which is obviously writing documents like a human would.
Right. And now in the medical field, of course, there's lots of applications to make so much of the siloed, unstructured or poorly structured data in medicine into something that's easier to use. I know clinical notes are famously hard to use as any kind of a big data application without applying some natural language processing. But tell me about kind of some of the use cases, especially around pharma and life sciences, for this technology.
So Gartner published something that they called the use case prism of around Gen AI in life science, and looking at this kind of safety domain, regulatory domain, they included things like kind of signal profiling, drafting documents such as regulatory filings and narratives and stuff. And while not necessarily exciting, those developments, those kind of AI developments and safety processes and automation, I think will have huge impact. Many of the pharmacovigilance processes are really routine and repetitive. So, you know, identify an adverse event, find the patient, drug dose, create the case report, the whole case management and downstream narrative and submission. It's maybe not exciting, but if you can develop automations to speed these and ensure accuracy and consistency, that'll have a really big impact. And then if you think about across the drug lifecycle, you can in essence break safety into kind of three buckets. Ideally at the start, you can predict safety or toxicology issues with potential new drugs from existing data during clinical development. And when the drug's on the market, you want to be able to capture and report any adverse event. And then you want to be able to evaluate safety information and safety signals against the context of known safety intelligence, internal and external. And for those three, predict, report, evaluate, you need all the other processes to be as efficient as possible to find the data, extract the data, standardize it, and then be able to analyze and generate insights. So for those kind of three big areas, that kind of predicting safety, reporting safety, evaluating safety, having AI and automation at all the other stages will really provide those kind of efficiencies and augment those processes.
Yeah, that totally makes sense to me. I heard a lot at JP Morgan about, you know, the potential of real world data, and safety monitoring was one of the areas, obviously, where there's a lot of interest there. But what are some of the challenges to kind of getting that data, you know, to be as clean and readable and reliable as it needs to be for something as important as safety monitoring?
So, I mean, that's one of the kind of holy grails, really, of safety, because the majority of adverse events aren't reported. I mean, I don't know about the people sitting around the table here or listening. I've never filled in an adverse event reporting form, and it's a surprisingly low number of healthcare professionals who've actually reported adverse events. So in essence, there's a huge underreporting of adverse events in the way that we traditionally look at that. Now, if you can move to real-world data, where from healthcare data, from clinical records, even from things like social media, people might be talking around they took a drug and they got a headache. And so if you can start pulling in that information, then the robustness, the depth and breadth of information you'll be able to get around any particular drug with that real-world data is going to be huge and really help boost your ability to understand your drug on the market, to understand potential impacts, risk benefit across different populations and so forth. But that means, as your question is really pointing to, how do you make sure that data can be reliable, clean, that you're handling it in a secure way, that it's diverse, covering the populations that reflect the real world. But really being able to start looking at real world data from a number of different sources is again, going to be kind of transformational for safety.
So what are some of the other kind of challenges and pitfalls with this data? I know that there are always conversations in AI about bias, and with the generative models more recently, certainly about, you know, hallucinations, about sort of confidently making up things it doesn't know. How do you kind of guard against some of those possibilities to make sure that the data is kind of unapproachable?
So, I mean,
I mean, things like when you're building your own large language models, you know, again, you want to make sure that you understand that that data set you're using reflects the real world. And the same when you're fine-tuning your models, you need reliable data. So, for example, if you want to fine-tune a model for understanding medical jargon health and answering health-related questions, then you need a nice, good data set of medical texts, scientific literature, for example. You need to make sure that you can verify and validate the performance and accuracy. So, again, that needs annotated data sets. And actually, we've done quite a lot of work as IQVIA NLP on looking at validation of different large language models for example, for healthcare entity extraction and identification. I mean, one of the, again, thinking back to safety and regulatory, one of the key things that's important is having your model to be explainable and then also including the phrases human in the loop. So that output can be examined by a human who's a subject matter expert and will be able to, in the majority of cases, look at particular answers and understand whether that fits with kind of reality.
As we look ahead, you know, to the coming year, what are some of the kind of advances in AI and or milestones in implementation and adoption that you're looking forward to in the industry? Where do we need to go and where do you think we are going?
So I think, I mean, there's huge potential. Everyone's talking about the potential of AI across kind of pharma drug discovery development. And I think, as we talked earlier, the ability of using kind of AI automation, even in routine tasks, to improve the kind of the quality and the efficiency of drug safety, you know, across safety vigilance, augmenting those repetitive, tedious tasks and freeing up the experts to give them more time for deeper analysis. That then enables safety experts to think about where can we transform those data to provide more value. For example, being able to look across broad data sets and look for sort of patient population signals that might not otherwise be visible. Understanding safety, efficacy, risk benefit for specific patient cohorts. And then again, thinking about that ability to, for predictive safety, predictive toxicology. I think it was Gartner predicted that by 2030, we would be, you know, 30-40% of all drugs would be being discovered using AI and generated by AI. So that's obviously something that is hugely exciting. Drug discovery is a very kind of expensive process. And if we can, using better data and better models, mean that new drugs are entering, more effective, safer drugs are entering the drug discovery pipeline, then that's going to really potentially be a game changer.
Yeah, and of course, we're seeing a lot of investment and work in AI around drug discovery, but we haven't actually, and correct me if I'm wrong, seen an AI-derived drug actually make it to market yet, right?
No, not yet. There's been, I mean, you're absolutely right. There's been a huge amount of, you could call it optimism or you could call it hype in how AI is really going to achieve those. But I mean, part of it is understanding the basic biology and again, being able to use NLP, for example, to really get really systematic, comprehensive landscapes of information from medical literature, for example, around a particular target and the whole target biology, pathways, you know, those really big systems biology type projects to understand as much information as possible should give a better lens to really think about how you can then use, you know, that target data as well as the safety and efficacy data and really start joining up some of those pieces, hopefully giving those kind of game-changing ways for drug discovery.
Is there anything else we haven't talked about yet, Jane, that you're really excited about in this space, maybe related to the work that you do or... or something you've seen doing kind of the working with folks in the industry?
I think, I mean, you said you were just at JP Morgan. We attended a few safety conferences at the tail end of last year. And what's interesting is everyone is I'm really excited about the potential of AI. Everyone's quite cautious, but everyone sees that, you know, the ability for that, for AI to help with kind of automating those processes. And I think one of the things is the more we can share those experiences from the talking to the farm experts at the conferences, they really want to understand other farmer experience and best practice from their vendor partners. So they are looking to vendors such as IQVIA for that kind of strategic partnership, for the advice, as well as building up their own data science team. So it's really interesting, this kind of balance between everybody really wanting kind of AI for automation, but everyone being slightly cautious about, you know, how, as you're saying, how do we understand the pitfalls around potential AI, and how do we make sure that when we're implementing proof of concepts, how do we make sure that we've got that clarity, the accuracy of the AI, we're ensuring that we're not having bias. And then just one other thought that we haven't touched on is, again, from the conferences, talking to people, it's a bit like a few years ago, everyone is saying that their boss is saying, please, can you get a project going that's using a large language model? And actually, that's not always the best tool for the task. Mm. And again, that's where having the right kind of experience using best practice. So it may be that to solve a task, you need a combination. You might need some of the much cheaper, in inverted commas, types of natural language processing, that sort of deterministic natural language processing, in order to get those really nice clean data sets, as you were saying, from some of the clinical data from patient records, for example. And then you might want to make sure that having got clean data using one NLP tool, you can then use your large language model for your summarization or for your natural language generation. So I think really making sure that people aren't kind of almost blinkered by the excitement that ChatGPT is generating, and still have that view that there's a whole suite of technologies that enable you and your teams to use these AI and different technologies and get better access to the unstructured text and the information in the unstructured text. And it's really, you know, not necessarily kind of leaping in with a large language model, which maybe has that, you know, the lack of transparency and bias potentially, and obviously is hugely expensive. You know, generative AI uses huge amounts of compute power, electricity. And so, you know, even from a completely different perspective, from that kind of sustainability perspective, you know, again, it's making sure that people understand how to use the right tool for the task and don't come in with a sledgehammer with a large language model to crack a nut.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, what is the danger of using the wrong tool? Is it an efficiency problem, or is it also, so you might not get the results you're looking for?
I mean, it's both. So, I mean, there's a lot of stories around the hallucinations. And I think that's really when you're using the sort of, you know, the off the shelf, you know, ChatGPT has been trained on, you know, internet data, not covering the last year or so. But when companies are implementing their own large language models internally, they have a lot more control. But it's really, you know, it's being able to make sure that you can build processes where you have that human in the loop. So whether you're using your experts to examine the output from a rules-based NLP, or from a, you know, machine learning transformer model-based NLP, or from a large language model, being able to have that kind of human in the loop review means that gives you that level of security. So obviously, if you've got really good control over your large language models, then you're less likely to get that issue around kind of, you know, bias and hallucinations. But you might just be ending up, you know, developing something that's hugely much more expensive than you actually need in order to solve your problem.
Got it. That makes sense. Well, I think we're close to wrapping it up here, Jane. Thanks so much for joining me today. Any final thoughts? Or any thoughts you'd want to share with folks who are listening, who are in the industry, who are working on their own AI strategies, who are, you know, trying to figure out how to take advantage of all of this stuff?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, one obvious thing is don't try and kind of boil the ocean. When we're working with clients, we always suggest it's best to find a very specific task, start with a small POC, make sure that you can really understand the requirements, the constraints, and from that small POC, hopefully you can build that. But I'm really excited for, you know, the potential of the large language models for, I mean, if nothing else, it's really exciting that everyone now is talking about natural language processing, large language models, generative text, generative AI. Whereas a couple of years ago, you know, it was still a much narrower set of understandings. And I think, you know, the potential to kind of automate, innovate across drug safety is going to be a really exciting area. But also not just for a kind of pharmacovigilance, but for that, you know, even more exciting innovations around kind of predictive safety, predictive tox to really enhance those early phases of drug discovery. So, you know, that data from post-market drug safety can feed more effectively into drug development. And hopefully that means we get safer drugs coming onto the market more effectively.
Excellent. Yeah, that's a great note to end on, I think. Well, thank you so much for joining me, and good luck keeping up with all of this as it develops.
It's going to be an exciting year.
I think so.
Thank you very much indeed.
That concludes this episode of the Pharma Forum podcast. You can find more information about this episode, including a download link and information about other installments in the series at pharmaforum.com/podcast. The Pharma Forum podcast is also available on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, and Podme, where you can find and subscribe by searching for Pharma Forum. And don't forget to visit our website, where you can sign up for daily news and analysis bulletins, and to follow us on Twitter at @PharmaForum. Thanks for listening.